The shir this morning, I wanted to give shir. I don't have many chidushim, but I wanted to really just learn a gemara that is in Baba Kama that I'm pretty sure none of the shir are doing. And it's not a gemara that's so well known, but it actually reflects in its basic principle and principles one of the core philosophical tenets of Torah. It's a tenet that I have addressed in a number of Sichos Musar about how we relate to our own property, but this really sends a very, very clear general message. Now, at the end of Perek Meruba, so there are three sets of ten. There are, most famous of the ten, I believe, are the ten Takanos, and they're termed Takanos of Ezra. Anybody know what any of the Takanos of Ezra are? Probably you do. What? See, yeah. Yes, you read Shum Andal Shabbos. Are you? Laning, the Kriyas HaTorah, the Gemara works out. What did Moshe Rabbeinu institute in Mara? What did Ezra add? So that's another thing. That probably, I thought the most famous one is Tfilas Balkeri for Kriyashma, Tfila, Talmud Torah. So those are called the ten Takanos of Ezra. Yeah, that's the second set of ten. The first set of ten, the last set of ten, are Asara Devarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim. Ten dinim that happen to apply to Yerushalayim. That a bayis is not chalut there, a batei rechoma, the bayis is not metameim in the gun, Yerushalayim, a whole series of dinim that apply specifically to Yerushalayim. Some of them are dinim d'oraisa, some of them are dinim d'rabbanan. But the first of the three, so those are Asara Devarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim, Asara Takanos Tiken Ezra, but the first one was Asara Tanaim Hisna Yoshua. When Yehoshua bequeathed, literally hinchil, or divided up the land and gave it to the Jewish people, so he made ten tanai. What is a tanai? A tanai is a condition. In effect, the goral, Kadosh Baruch Hu, was being machne Eretz Yisrael biprat to the Jewish people, individual portions, and as Yeshua said, you're getting this land, but it's al tanai. There are tanai, there are conditions that are attached to it. Normally, I sell you my car. Right? I'll sell Yosef my car. Okay, except for one thing. I want use of the car on Sundays. Okay, so Yosef will own the car, but the tanai is that I have use of the car on Sundays. So Yehoshua instituted 10 tanaim when he gave the Jewish people the land of Eretz Yisrael, when each person received his, or in some cases, her chelek. What are the 10 tanaim? So what I present you here is, first I'm going to present the initial brisa. And then, rather than giving you the entire Gemara, I've taken the Rush, because the Rush basically digests the Gemara. Now, if one could speak in generic terms, but not absolutely ubiquitous, the Braisa presents some pretty sweeping limitations on ownership. I wouldn't say limitations on ownership, but rights that other people have in your property, that you own in Eretz Yisrael, that you received in Eretz Yisrael. And most of the Gemara that follows tends to somewhat limit those rights. In other words, the Braisa would allow some pretty broad rights of usage, and the Gemara says, okay, but lo amaran, it only applies in this case or that case. But let's first start with the Braisa. Asara Tanaim Hisna Yoshua, the first source. Shiyumarin Bechorshin. You're allowed to graze your animals in forests. Umelachtin Eitzim B'Sidose. Now, obviously it means not your forest, somebody else's forest. Melachtin Eitzim B'Sidoseim. You're allowed to gather wood from somebody else's field. Umelachtim Asavim B'Chol Makom Chutz Mitilson. If somebody has a field in which grass sprouted, presumably wheat is a kind of grass too, but it means non, let's say, edible grasses, or clearly grass that the owner normally would not want in the field, that's not hidden planted, it just grew there, you're allowed to take that grass. Let's say you want to feed your behema, except for mechutz mitilson, unless it's in a field of fenugreek, which is tilson, whatever that is, it's some type, I think it's a kind of legume, if I'm not mistaken. Vikotman number four, vikotman netios mechomakom chutz migrofio shelzayis. If someone has a tree and you want to cut a branch in order to plant your own tree, you're allowed to cut a branch from somebody else's tree, take it to your backyard, your land, and plant it there. Chutz migrofio shelzayis, except for an olive tree, a particular detail, whatever that is. That's number four. Number five. Umayon hayotze betchila b'nei ha'ir mistach mimenu. If all of a sudden a spring bursts forth And for the moment, I'm going to explain the way most Rishonim understand, and what I think really fits better. There's another sheet of the Rambam I have later on the Makoros. It means that if I have property, and then a spring just sort of bursts forth from that land, so I'm not entitled to insist that I keep all the water. All the Bnei Ha'ir are allowed to use that water. Then, number six, Mechakin b'yama shel Tveria, uvavad shelo yifros kela b'yamid es hasfina. Mechakin is not a typical word. In this case, what does normally mechakin mean? What? To wait, right? But that doesn't mean you're allowed to wait in the yama shel Tveria. It literally comes from the word chaka. It's a denominative verb. It means you're allowed to fish. You can put a hook on your fishing rod, and you're allowed to fish with a fishing rod, with a hook, but you're not allowed to spread out a kela, a net, v'yamid es hasfina. Just the way some Rishonim explain, because by doing so, you're going to interfere with the nautical traffic, right? The maritime traffic. Now, who owns, by the way, Tveria? Who owns the Yamash of Tveria? Naphtali. Yam v'darom yirasha. So they inherited the shoreline, apparently, both the west, I don't know if there is a northern shore technically here, but the western side and the southern side, so that was Bechelak Naphtali. That was Takana number six. Hitnai number six. Number seven. V'nifne la'achore ha'geder v'afilu b'sadem le'akarkom. You're allowed, if you need to relieve yourself, you're allowed to go into someone's field. You go behind the geder, obviously, because you want privacy. And you're allowed to relieve yourself there. V'afilu b'sde karkom. Now, karkom, you know what karkom is? No. Karkom is saffron. It is extremely expensive. If you go, I haven't gone until recently, but if you go into Costco and they sell a little thing of saffron, like a little thing, I don't know how many ounces or what fraction of ounces in there, but if you always look on the things, they tell you price per pound. I believe the price per pound of saffron is like $4,000 or $5,000. Gives you an idea of how expensive it is now, and it was always a very, very valuable spice. It's like if you learn Nida, and Kikaren HaKarkom is one of the maros of blood. So if you go on Google and look for pictures of saffron, and you'll see the little stems of the stamen, I think the stamen, right in the middle of the flower. There are a few of them that have that kind of reddish color. But basically, it's those little stamens that they use. Not the rest of the flower can't be used for producing the saffron that people would use as a spice or something. So you don't get it very much out of each flower. So it is extremely expensive. So the Gemara says, Vafilu v'sadem le'akarkom. Obviously, you can tell from this statement that karkom must be a very valuable field. So you're allowed to relieve yourself behind the wall, even though it's on private property. As an aside, this one may actually speak volumes most of any of these takanos to contemporary society. It's a very serious issue. You're walking in New York City and you need a bathroom. Right? New York City doesn't have public bathrooms. From a hashkafic perspective, it's deeply problematic. Right? In other words, having a society and community where you have such a thing is actually very problematic. And this takana, obviously, they didn't have porta-johns, and they didn't have plumbing. So the way you relieve yourself at home, in fact, 100 years ago, if any of you, I say my grandparents, probably your great-grandparents, if they lived in Eastern Europe or in Hungary, you know, in the shtetl, the way your bathroom was an outhouse. So that's 2,000 years old or more technology. That's what people did. But a society having the fact is, I'm going on the derech, it's all private fields. What am I going to do? The answer is, so niftam lachoe hageder v'afilu b'stei karko. Fine, that was number seven. Number eight, mahalchen b'shvilei harashus achetei reid revi ashniya. You're allowed to walk through private property if there are, let's say, paths that go through the field that people might use, but the problem is it's somebody's private property. So once the second rains come down, so walking through the field already, the crops are starting to sprout, it's going to damage other people's crops. But up until that point, there's really no loss to somebody else. That's actually significant. And therefore, why wouldn't you let somebody go through your field? Finally, number nine. Mistalkin litzide hadrachim and yesedos hadrachim. This is interesting. This doesn't come up today for most of us. Are there any hikers here? Any avid hikers here? So when you hike on a path and there's like, it's very wet and there are puddles, what do you do? You walk around, which is not necessarily good. You know, the trail maintainers will tell you it's not great because what you end up doing is you're creating more paths. You're taking more out of the forest. But that's what we do. When you don't have the shoes, you can't go through the puddles, so you go around. Now, this is the equivalent. You're going on the derech, but remember, so this doesn't happen normally in New York City, and there are potholes, but you can walk into a pothole, walk over a pothole, walk out of a pothole. But if you're walking in a place where the road has issues, and in this case, it's a Seydus HaDrachim, it's a muddy road, but it's solidified, and you have lots of bumps, and it's very uneven, and it's very hard to walk, and you're going to turn an ankle, so you're allowed to be mistal, like, let's see the HaDrachim. You're allowed to walk on the sides, even though it's private property. Right? The modern-day equivalent, you know, would be, I don't know, in suburbia, if the sidewalk's all cracked up, and you're going to trip. So it happens to be that the grass, if there's grass between the sidewalk and the street and you could walk there, that's public property technically. But let's say you couldn't, so you walk up on the side that actually belongs to the private property. That would be the equivalent. Then number 10, Vatoa Bein HaKramim, Mafsig V'Ola Mafsig V'Yorid. Okay, so this is, you're hiking, but you're in somebody else's vineyard. You're walking on one of the rows, a path, and you get lost. And what do? You can't find your way out. It feels like you're going to mace. You're actually allowed to cut through the vines if you need to, even though you're damaging his property, in order to free yourself so you can get back on the road. And finally, number 11, umeis mitzvah kona mekoma. If a body is found, and it's found on private property, that's where the location they first find it, al pidin, the mace is buried right there. He's kona the makom. Okay, so these are the 10 takanot. I know, what's the problem? There are 11. I'm sorry, only one person raised his hand to complain. Either he's the only one who noticed, or he's the only one who's bold enough to challenge my mathematics. Well, you've done advanced math work, so there you go. 11 is not 10. Okay? So the Gemara asked that question, and one of them gets pulled out. And it's worth talking about the one that actually kind of gets pulled out, because it actually is the one that stands out. You can actually classify all of these things into, I have essentially, I would say I have three different categories aside from the last one, of which these various takanos fit into. So we'll talk about that. I want to quickly just read through the rush. So I've done what's proper, you know, of presenting these tinoim in context, and then we'll talk about, as we're doing this, you can think about what kind of sort of categories these fall into. Tanu Rabbanan, the source number 2. Asara Tanaim Hisnei Yeshua. Shemar in the Harshim, you can graze your animals in somebody else's forest. Vidafka behemadaka biyarshi in the Nasav Gasin. Only small animals in forests where the trees are already big trees, so the animals are not going to destroy the trees. If the Ilon Asar were dakim, so the animals will destroy the saplings. Fine, that's number 1. Number 2, malachtim kotzim mechubarim lachen mikol makom. When it means you can gather wood in somebody else's field, that means, not any wood, it's not that you have, you know, an oak tree going there, ooh, there's some good wood. That means you have thorn bushes growing that are still attached to the ground. It's not like the person has cut them already, and they're moist, they're not dried out yet, which means they're not useful, at least for kindling right now, not as of yet, so you're allowed to gather wood like that from somebody else's, field. We're not talking about a tree farm here, where somebody is growing the stuff off of wood. It means the kind of things that typically people aren't necessarily going to use. Then, malakten asavim mikol makom, chutz misad etilson, demali le'asavim, heche diboy le'lizirin. The Gemara gives two possibilities of why people are growing the tilson. If they're growing them lizirin, not lizera, I don't know exactly what lizirin are, but it's not for producing more seed, but for some other part of the plant, so then people don't care about having the grass there. The grass doesn't benefit them at all. In this case, you're allowed to rip out that grass. But if they are, in fact, growing at Lazera, then the grass, for whatever reason, is something that they're allowed to have, that they would want, and therefore you're not allowed to take it. Uchagom, but one other condition, the less bushir kilayim, dainu rova kav lebeisa, shu echem yichabdalat, provided that the amount of the grass is less than 1/24 of the field, because if it's more than, it's 1/24 of the field or more, if you learn the Mishnayos and Kalayim, the owner is mechuyev to rip out the grass, and if he doesn't, based in the Mishnah and Shkalim says there were originally 3 takanas, when people wouldn't rip the Kalayim out of their field, so initially the based in would go and do it, and rip it out and just leave it there, and the owners were happy because based in weeded their fields for them, and their animals got to eat the stuff. So then, they made a takana that they would take the grass, And they would rip it out, but they would throw it on the derech, so the animals, the owner's animals, didn't get to eat other animals. But the balabatim were still happy, because at least their fields got weeded for nothing. Finally, they declared that anybody who had the kalayim there and they'd get rid of it, they'd be mafkir the field. That got people's attentions. And so anyway, so in this particular case, you have to rip out the stuff anyway. And the takana would be that anybody could take the entire field, so certainly you could take the grass. But if it's a case where there's less than 1/24 of kalayim, and the owners would like to have the grass, then mitzad kalayim it's batel, then machoyiv lakor, and mitzad the fact that they actually want that grass, it's not treated as hefker. Fine. He goes on to quote it, diyabashir hefker, diyabashir kalayim, have a hefker, etc. Next. V'kot min nitiya, on the fifth line, mikomakom, chutz mi grofio shel zayis, perish rabbeinu tanchu, mishum zakein echad, v'zayis kebeitza gavoh min akarka. There's a specific size of the tree where the person really, really is makbid on it. And v'konim v'bugafanim, you're allowed to rip, you're allowed to trim, take a branch min apakakul amal, above a certain point on the tree. Ushar kol ilanos, me'ibo shel ilan, perish mi perio, da'ainu anaf and rakim. You're allowed to take the probably very small, soft branches, Nusach acher mechubo shel ilan dahainu meimso sheish mahar bein often yikach ben hanechben beemtza. Fine. So you're allowed to take certain branches where really there's no loss to the owner. Probably it should be pruned anyway. Beemtza govo v'lo mechudo dahainu megezan sorry berosha. You can't take from the top of the trunk. And it has to be min achada sheino saperus lo meyashur saperus. It has to be a branch which isn't producing fruit yet. And mimakom sheino roacham. It has to be a branch of the tree that doesn't have exposure to the sun. In Eretz Yisrael, as here, that would be, you have to take from the northern side, not the southern exposure, which always has the sun. Okay, so that was takana number four. Fine. So you're allowed to cut, you know, a branch for the purposes of grafting, of planting, from, but, you know, with a whole bunch of conditions attached to it. Number five. Mayan hayotze b'tchila mistap imenu b'nei ha'ir, v'einan srichan litein danim. They don't have to pay for the water. Now, this is interesting. The Gemara, the Braisa just said that Mayan Hayotze Bitchila, so Bereheir Mistaf Kimimen. But one day in the Gemara said, but they should have to pay money for using the water. And the Gemara says, no, we don't pass it that way. That water is considered effectively a public resource. And then the Rush continues, Umechakin Biyama Shel Tvaria. Kol Adam, even if you don't have shore property, you're not from Shevet Naphtali. Uvovachalei first kelav yamin es asfina. Avol bal hayam, someone who has beachfront property, tzad birishasos uvemichmaros, he is allowed to use certain kinds of nets. All right, a kela might be something bigger; it can interfere with the boats, but he's at least everybody else is only allowed to fish with a fishing rod. But that's what your license is for. But the Balei Hayam, the people who own that land, they're allowed to do a little bit more. Then, V'niftin la'chore ha'gedar afilu b'sada melei ha'karkon. Now the Gemara adds, not just can you relieve yourself there, afilu litol tsror min ha'kosa mutar, you're allowed to take out a stone from the wall, a loose stone, in order to wipe yourself. That's what they use this toilet paper, tsroros. And v'afilu b'shabbos. This is a reference to the din that kavod habrios is though people say, someone asked me a shayla recently about something that they thought might be an issur d'rabbanan, which I think wasn't, but they said in this case, would kavod habrios be enough to be matir? You know, if you were eating in certain contexts where you had certain questions of kashrus, but the suffix was only a d'rabbanan, and it might be uncomfortable. So the answer is, kavod habrios is not doche issur d'rabbanan. Except for when the Gemara says it is. And the only place the Gemara says that kavod habrios is doche issurim d'rabbanan is when it comes to relieving oneself, specifically on Shabbos. So there are all sorts of things we allow, whether it's things, malacha b'shinoi, or muktzah, things like that, are allowed specifically for this one particular issue of kavod habrios after one cleaning oneself, after one relieves oneself. So here the Rush says, and I'm allowed, not only can I relieve myself in the field, I'm also allowed to take a stone out of his wall. The Midas Chasidus, the Gemara tells a story about what Amora, who did, but then he told the Shamish, you know, later, please go and replace the stone in the wall and, you know, put a little bit of mud to plaster it over and so on. But that's not required, Alpidin. Alpidin, I can take the stone. It doesn't mean I can knock the wall down. Obviously, we're talking about something, anything that you could take out of the wall on Shabbos would have to be something that's only Melacha D'Rabbanan. Probably, unless you argue it's a kilkul, if it's really like cemented in, so that's probably a Melacha D'Raisa. Okay, next. Mahalchen b'shvile harashus achetei reid revi. One is allowed to walk on these paths until the second rains, where it's going to damage potentially the plants. V'hadi dan, and this is really the Gemara, afilim mishiyirid atal al azraim, kashalim drisa saraga. Once the dew starts to come down on the plants, I guess that's a little earlier, then it's already asr. U'mistalkan letzidei hadrachim, and then you say those hadrachim. You're allowed to walk on the sides, that's straight from the Gemara, v'atoa ben akramin, mfasek v'olam mfasek v'yore. That's also, he doesn't offer any discussion. The Gemara does point out that there are, that midoraisa, without Yeshua's Tanai, you were not allowed to be mefaseg if there were a way to walk around. If the Tanai of Yeshua is, I don't know how much length that is, but you actually don't have to go the long route. If you find yourself lost and you see the road, but it would be a very long way around, you can sort of cut your way through. And the Gemara says a comment that this applies not only to someone else who's allowed to help you, a good Samaritan, where they know where the road is clearly and they know where you are, but even you who are not sure and you're kind of blindly cutting your way through, you're allowed to do that. That's where, and then, finally, in Yud Ches, he talks about Meis Mitzvah. He quotes a Maimer of Shmuel from the Gemara that these dinim apply even in Chutz Laaretz, which is kind of interesting. Right? Yeshua made the Tanaim when it was a Tanaim of inheriting Eretz Yisrael, and yet Shmuel to Machlokas, the Rosh Paskins like Shmuel Hilchasak Shmuel Bedine, that the Tanaim of Yeshua apply even in Chutz Laaretz, which is interesting. And that tells you, by the way, that it's obviously a broader value system. It's, in other words, obviously the assumption is the Jewish people, as we stand here in Galus on Yom HaTzmaut, is that all the Jewish people are going to be living in Israel. So you make the Jewish law applies in Israel, and Jewish values apply in Israel. But in reality, Shmuel speaking in Chutz Laaretz, living in Chutz Laaretz pretty much, not his entire life, but his adult life certainly, and he's saying that these Tanaim represent basic principles of how you go about living, and these apply, obviously, only when you're dealing with Jews in Chutz Laaretz. Okay. Now, I present at the end of the Rush three Tanaim that Yeshua made that are not listed in this list of 10 or 11. More on that in a moment. These three are listed by the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know why weren't they included in the list. And the Gemara gives some kind of a teretz. It's a machlokas harishon whether we do or we don't paskin this way, but I want to just read those three because they are not, there's a very logical reason why these are not included in the list of the 10. So let's read. Tanai based in Hushe Yuzei Yori the Tosnei Chaveiro. You have a hive of bees or a colony of bees, and they all kind of run away, and they center around, they recreate their hive on someone else's branch. And you want your bees back, but apparently you can't just take the bees or you'll just get stung, it's not very well. So what you want to do is cut the branch off that guy's field and take it back to your field, and now you have the beehive again in your field. So the Brisa says that you're allowed to go down, you cut the branch off, and you pay the owner for the branch. Number two, Tanai Beisdin, Sheshofech Yeno, Umatzel Dushano Shel Chaveira. Venotel Dame Yeno, Mitel Dushano Shel Chaveira. I don't want to go into all the details, but for the moment, it means the following. I have a barrel of honey that's very, very expensive and very valuable. You have a barrel of wine. My barrel of honey has developed a crack. And at this point, it's not all flowing out, but I'm afraid it's all going to flow out. You have a barrel of wine, so I can force you to dump the wine from your barrel. I will pour the honey from my about-to-break barrel into your barrel, no longer of wine, and I will pay you for the wine. In other words, the dvash might be worth $200, the wine worth $50, I save the dvash, and now I give you $50. You know, and I certainly have it because there's $200 worth of honey here. So I am allowed to break your wine barrel and in order to save my honey. And finally, number three, tonight, based in Shem of Farik as Eitzav, the Toein Pishtano Shel Chaver Venotel Dmei Eitzav Mitel Pishtan. I have an animal, I have a donkey, or I have a truck, and my truck breaks down, and I'm carrying a load of flax, and you're carrying a load of wood, kindling wood. So the halacha is that I can say, I can commandeer your truck, throw the wood out, put my flax, my pishtim, in the truck, and I'll pay you for the loss of your wood. I'm allowed to do that. So the Gemara says that these are yechidai. It means we don't paskel like them, or it means that Tanaim were only identified by individual Tanaim. But that's what the Gemara says, and that's why they're not counted in the 10 Takanos of Yoshua. Okay, so let's take a few minutes now. There is also one more set, which is somewhat different as well, that I skipped over in the rush, but it's found in the Yerushalmi and in the Bavli, the idea that I am allowed sometimes to put stuff down in the Rishas HaRabim. In the Yerushalmi, it's Avno Sakino Maso. In the Bavli, I'm allowed to dump my Zevel in the Rishas HaRabim. And even in the case of the Bavli, certainly, you may be allowed to do it, but you're chayiv in the Nezek. If something happens, then I have to pay. Okay. Now, what is the common denominator, firstly, of everything in this list in one way or another? If you had to sum it up, Mr. Ginsberg?
They all represent like some idea of like nobody has complete ownership over property.
Exactly. It's a limitation in property rights. That's what this boils down to. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you divide up the land. So an individual might be tempted to say, this is my land, shali shali. So Yeshua said, I'm giving you the land, but your rights are not absolute in the land.
What about the fishing one?
What's that?
Wouldn't the fishing in the Yam of Tveria be an exception to that?
No, because the fishing in the Yam of Tveria, the assumption is that the sea also belongs to Naphtali. It's in their chelek.
Right, but the owners of the actual land in the sea can fish however they want. It's only the people
they can do more, but the bottom line is, by right, they should be able to say, you can't even come with your fishing pole. And you're allowed to come with your fishing pole. I don't know that the Gemara says. The Gemara says it with respect to Zvulun. The Gemara Megil Davam that Zvulun Am Cheref Nasholamus that they were complaining that Zvulun had the seashore, and God said, "You have treasures there. You have the Schuchas Levana and you have the Chilazon." And they wanted to know, "But what happens if people come and steal it from us?" Whatever. So the Gemara talks about that there. So the sea rights. There was such, you can see from the Gemara, by the way, that there is such a thing as having rights in the water, even on the ocean. Certainly in Naphtali, where probably it was mostly enclosed in their portion. So every one of them entails a limitation on property rights, but they are actually differences between these. If you start with the first four, Myron Bechorshin, Malachim Eitzim Misoseim, Malachim Asavim, and Kotman Natios, how would you classify those? What is the sort of common denominator of those? So it means you have property, something in your private property, something, Ilan?
You could sort of take the payroll type of property.
Well, it is payroll, but it's also something that it's, the way especially the Bavli limits it, it means things that would typically be hefker. In other words, I have a forest, and I don't do anything in this forest. It's not a field. I don't plant anything. So you're allowed to graze certain of your animals as long as they're not really going to destroy, you know, do long-term damage, to, you know, eco-damage to the forest. Now, could I be, somebody might say, there might be one person occasionally says, no, I'm not good on my forest. I want it this way. The answer is too bad. We said that since most people normally are not machped on this, right? Most people, when you have moist thorn bushes, they're not machped on that wood. It's not like they've cut it yet. It's not like it's dry where it easily can be cut and used. It's not like it's a fancy wood that people normally would at least take advantage of. It's thorn bushes. So there, the assumption is people are not machped on it. You're machped on it? Too bad. You don't have absolute rights in your property. Someone else can take and benefit and consume your property. And the same thing is true for the Asavim, except for Tilson, where people are people are more broadly machped, and by Kotman the Tios. Right? You could say I want that branch. You could want that branch in order to use it for firewood. The answer is I'm allowed to take from your tree. That might have some bearing. I'm not saying immediate bearing on companies like Monsanto and their seeds. And if you know the story behind that and certain rules that get attached to it and so on. Okay. Then you have number 5 and number 6. Mayan Hayotze B'tchila. The Rambam has a very difficult sheet. I looked on the Bar Ilan. I didn't see any of the Nosei Kelim who address that the Rambam's view is completely different than the other Rishonim. What's the chiddush of Mayan Hayotze B'tchila B'nei Ha'ir Mistapkin Yimenu? So most of the Rishonim say that it comes on the field of a Yochid. It comes out of private property. But we say that everybody, all the Bnei Ha'ir are allowed to use this water. Now, a note that both Tosfos and the Rashba make, based upon a Gemara of Avodah Zarah, is that there is a distinction between, they're faced with a stira. The Gemara in Bava Basra makes it sound like you can have a private spring, and here it sounds like you can't have a private spring. And then the yeshua that they present is that if you dug to produce the spring, then you have the rights in that spring. But if this spring was nifka me'elav, you know, it came up on its own, then you, even though it's in your property, you don't have the rights to all the water. The Rambam seems to understand exactly the opposite. If you look at the source number 6, the Rambam writes, V'chein hisna, shahamayan hayotze betchila, b'neho sa'ir sheyotza begvula mistapkim menu, afal pi she'eni karo b'chelkom, v'ein lacherin mistapkim menu. In other words, when you have a spring, the fact that the spring breaks through the ground here doesn't mean that's where the water really is. Right? The water, the aquifer, may be somewhere else, and you're just, this is just the makom in which it was yotze. So the Rambam says, nonetheless, because it was Yotze the Chelak B'nei Ha'ir, only B'nei Ha'ir Mistapkim Yimenu. In other words, this is odd in that this the Rambam's shot is very difficult, because this would be the only case where Adarabba, they're effectively awarding you rights and limiting other people when it really rightfully shouldn't even be yours. Whereas every other example is taking away something that rightfully should have been yours. But that's what the Rambam says here. Okay. Now coming back to that, the case of Mayin Hayotze B'Tchila and Mechakem B'Yam Esher Tvarya are both examples of a resource that presumably the Bailam of those resources, if they could, would be allowed to, if they were allowed to, they would be makbid on it. Right? I have a spring. Why should I let anybody else take the water? The wood in my field, I don't care. I don't use all that stuff. So go ahead. You know, if I'm a reasonable person, go ahead and use that. You're consuming my property, but I normally would consume myself, so it basically should be hefker. Whereas here, we are actually something that people would normally be machped on, because it is cutting to their resources, both water-related, although the fishing one isn't actually water consumption. And we're saying, too bad. You're right, it is in your chelek, and we are usurping your individual rights, and we are allowing public usage of one kind or another of what should be your public property, even though maybe a person typically would want to really commandeer or take possession of his own things and not let other people use it, at least not without payment. And that's why there was a day in the Gemara about Mayan Hayotze B'Tchila, it's rejected, who said, but Huvashi Yitain Damim. Because in this case, you would want to sell the spring water. Okay. Number seven, number nine, and number ten. I can relieve myself in your field, even in the state karkom, even if it means taking something out of your wall. I am allowed to walk on your private property because the main road is unwalkable or very difficult. And I'm allowed to cut my way out of your vineyard by cutting down, you know, branches. Those three have in common that they are causing damage to your property. And for the moment, but it's a machlokas, the Ravid and the Rashba, it doesn't even seem that you have to pay for it. Now, the difference between these, let's say, and the first two, is that I'm not actually making use of the stuff that I'm damaging. In other words, the difference between Nezek and Gezel, typically, is that Gezel, I steal something because I want to use it. Of course, Gezel is a form of, every Gezel is a form of Nezek, but not every form of Nezek is Gezel. Nezek could just be, I decide, you know, to smash the windows of your car just for, I mean, I know I probably get some hanah out of it. Or, I'm just throwing rocks for fun, I'm not trying to break your glass, it happens I break your glass. Right, so nezek, I'm not being fundamentally nene from the guf hadavar. I'm not being nene from the fact that I do your nezek. Right, it's for me in all these cases. It's essentially avoiding a different kind of hezek. Right, in defecation, I'm avoiding the discomfort and the pain of not being able to relieve myself. And the other two, I'm literally directly damaging your property, but not because I want to take your property, not because I want to ultimately benefit because I have your property, but just because I'm going to get injured if I don't do that. Now, meis mitzvah is sort of its own category. Meis mitzvah is, because of kavod habrios, that a person dies there, and we take away your field. A field that you would want to use. We're not benefiting from it, but that's about basically kavod to human beings. Now, the one that really doesn't fit in this whole thing, the one that doesn't fit is that you're allowed to walk through the path in somebody's field, atra tevei revi'a shniya. Why does that not fit in any of these? You're not damaging anything. You're not taking anything. You are benefiting. The only kind of person who would be makbid is an ish sidon. So, not surprisingly, the Gemara, being arithmetically astute, said, excuse me, there are 11 to 9 here, not 10. The Gemara takes this one out and says, this belongs to Shlomo HaMelech. This was not Yoshua's takana, but this belongs to Shlomo. And the Gemara says, how do we know this from Shlomo? Because it says, Mios Tov Al Tikrei Ra. Now, where is that pasuk? The Gemara says, doesn't say anywhere. There is no such pasuk. So instead, the Gemara says, you know what it's referring to? Al Timna Tov Mibalav V'yesh La'el Yad Chalasos. If you can be helpful to somebody else, you have the power, yesh la el yadcha, you don't withhold somebody from somebody else. In other words, don't be a sodomite. This is, no. Once revia shnia comes, once the property will be damaged, then you're entitled to be makbitri mochan, so you can't walk through the field. But during the off-season, when nothing's being planted, when letting people walk through the path, is not going to damage your property in any way whatsoever. They're being nene from you, but we would say, to borrow another sugya in Baba Kama from the second parak, zenene, but zelo chaser. So of course, why? Now, normally, any of you learn the sugya of zenene, zelo chaser? So you know in that sugya, theoretically, zenene, zelo chaser is discussing a patur after the fact that you have to pay. But if you want to be makbid and keep somebody out, you are allowed to stop somebody from being in your field. From, in other words, let's say I don't normally rent out my chatzer, and you want to kind of, you know, you want to slum there, and you normally would never pay. If you couldn't be in my chatzer, you'd be sleeping in a bus shelter or in a youth hostel where they don't charge you, or, you know, in some hefker place, in a cave somewhere. So, yeah, if you do that, you don't have to pay me after the fact. Then if the chatzer might not be high to pay, but if I say you're not allowed to be here, I'm up, and you're not allowed to be there. So here we're saying, too bad. The takana is, you're not allowed to stop people. They want to walk through the field then, when they're not doing any damage. Yeah, it's your property. It's your private property. Nonetheless, you have to let them use it. So that doesn't fit the model of the other 10 takanos, because there's no damage to you there. It's really, it's midas sedom to be makbid in those cases. Okay. Now, there were the last three tanoim that are Shalmanaskein Hinchle Yeshua Yisrael Esa'aretz at the end of the Rush, which is from the Gemara. I just didn't put that part of the Gemara. What is the common denominator of all those three things? I can cut down Demei, I can cut down your Socha, which has my bees on it, and I can force you to spill out your wine to save my honey and force you to unload your truck, you know, with your wood so I can save my pishtan. How is that different than these? The Gemara also says it's Yechidah. There's another logical reason not to lump them with the previous ones, are you?
I mean, they're direct benefit for
you. They are direct benefit from you, but so is taking your wood or your grass or using your forest. There is direct benefit. There's something more. What?
Plus damage to someone else.
Yes, but that always, if I take your property, in some cases I may also be damaged. And you, like the water, you could have sold the water. I've stolen your water. Yes.
Amen.
You have to pay. That's what's interesting. In these three, you have to pay. Which leads me to the last point that I wanted to make before I close with, I'll call it Dibra Hashkafa, is the Machlokas, the Rashba, and the Ravid. The Ravid writes on Mefasek V'Olam, Mefasek V'Yored, it's source number 4, Perish HaRavid Zav, Afal Gav, Damrina, and Oso La'adam La'hatzel Atzma M'chavero, Hani Meid B'chinam, Shlo Liten La'adam, Avamna Sheyiten La'adamim, Ein L'chadabar She'omei B'fnei Pikuach Nefesh. Now, little word here, another sugya. Any of you do, Daf Samach, and do the sugya of Matzel Atzma M'chavero? Probably not. No, not in my guess. A very important sugya. The Gemara tells the following story very briefly. David HaMelech was fighting with the Philistines, and the Plishtim were hiding in the Jewish haystacks, the barley stacks. And he wanted to know whether he could burn the barley stacks down in order to help his soldiers to destroy the Philistine cover or not. And he sent the Shaila. Some of you know the Agada about it. And three of his giborim break through the enemy lines. They get to Beis Lechem. They ask the Shaila, but because they were misaking themselves, David spilled out the water on the ground, and he went. They won't quote the Shmua Bishvam because you're not supposed to be Moshe Nefesh like that. But what was the response David got from the Sanhedrin? Ma'u lahatzel atzma mechavero, and the answer is. That you have rights as a king. So the Gemara says, Osir lahatzel atzma mechavero, which is the way Rashi reads, and I'm not going to talk about it now, but the very famous Shuvah of the Binyan Tzion about autopsies, where he was a big macher, and he holds that it is Osir lahatzel atzma mechavero mamish, even in Pikuach Nefesh cases, even though it's money. We don't accept that position, at least there are klal. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, like Tosus in the Rush, who both say, what do you mean, Asir Lahatz Atzma Mechavero? Only three Averos, so you're Herakia Yavor. Gilaraya, Sabo the Zarish, Vichos Domim. So they say, no. When we say, Asir Lahatz Atzma Mechavero, it means you're chayiv to pay. You're chayiv to pay. Yes, you're allowed to save your life destroying, stealing, taking, using somebody else's property, but you have to pay for the damages. So the Ravid says here, even though it's Asir Lahatz Atzma Mechavero, by Mefasev Ola, Mefasev Yorin, nonetheless, well, it means that you have to pay. But the Rashbah disagrees. He says, "Velulei she'amar Rav Zal hayisi omer shekol takanos elu below nesinas damim." The whole point of these takanos are that you don't have to pay for its uses. Shamanas kein hincha yeshuas aretz. Ve'ilu b'nesinas damim. If you're trying to save yourself, but you're going to pay, lamali takanos yeshua below takananami hadin kein shematzal atzma v'nosein hadamim. There is a discussion in Achronim whether or not, I think it's a fringe opinion, what if you know you won't be able to pay? Or, putting that aside, they at least say that when you do it, it's only mutter if you do it al manas to pay, when you matzel atzma. So the Ravid's opinion, the Rashba's question is, one second, you don't need a takan of Yeshua, a tanai of Yeshua, to be permitted to be matzel atzmacha by being mefasek l'olam, mefasek v'yored, if after all, it's mutter, you just have to pay. Yes?
Like the case of David wasn't referring to like pikuach nefesh. Like, is there? Do you see the difference between pikuach nefesh? You can do it on the condition you'll pay, but if it's just because of damages, then you wouldn't be allowed to do it.
So that's not clear at all. The issue normally we say, what about matzil mamamon v'mamon chaver? We don't allow. But here, there's no way. If there were another way, it would be one thing. So here, nezek haguf is treated the same as actually dying. Right? In other words. The assumption is, again, the Rashba is certainly assuming that way. He's assuming that Nezek Haguf, and so is the Ravid, assuming that Nezek Haguf, the Rashba is certainly assuming that Nezek Haguf, it is also Mutter Lahat Zalatzman, not only Mali Katla Kula, but even Katla Palka, even if it's injury, but you have to pay.
I thought we were talking about the case where, like, you can destroy unfortunately wine for your honey.
So that may be different, because those you might say require it tonight because it's just being matzo mamamon b'mamon chavera. Right? It is also lahatzo mamono b'mamon chavera. That's clear. That's clear from the Gemara. But here it's not mamono when you go on the sides of the drachim moy mefasig va'ola. It's actually gufo. It's not pikuach nefesh. Although mefasig va'ola and mefasig va'ola could be pikuach nefesh. Do you say this hadrachim or not? But it certainly seems from the Rashba that even nezek haguf it's mota lahatzo. But it's not mota lahatzo mamono b'mamon chavera.
So. Asher means one thing by mono and another thing by nafsho?
Yes. Again, listen, there's a reason why Rashi, and a minority opinion, wants to read the Gemara literally. Right? Asher lahatzel atzma mechaver. It's only because the broader sugya that of the Gemara Averos says, what do you mean? But Gezel's not listed as one of them. Those who say, by the way, the Binyan Siyam explains that those Gemara Averos are asher even when they're only ben adam lamakom, and you can have cases for each of them and they're only ben adam lamakom, even murder. But he says that the halacha never permits anything ben adam l'chavero for pikuach nefesh without the consent of the party. The gimel averos are also, even though it's only ben adam l'makom, but the heter is only mitzvah ben adam l'makom generally. Okay, so the Rashba thinks that's not the case, and he points to these three cases. The three cases, the last three cases, the Tanaim, are also scenarios in which you have to pay. It's mashma that the earlier takanos, including Mefasig La'or and Mefasig Yoreh, you don't have to pay because that was part of Yoshua's Tanakh. Okay. The question is, what is the basis? What was the underlying rationale of Yoshua's Tanakh? Why did he attach these stipulations? So the Sifra, the Torah Kohanim, writes in Parshas Bahar, on a pasuk that's worth reminding ourselves, certainly on Yom Ha'atzmaut. The Torah says that when you buy fields, v'zvansha yovo noeg, which was the way we're supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael, so it comes the yovo year, lands go back to their owner. And the Torah says, v'aretz lo sim alcher litzmisus. It's a question whether this is just a chalos, whether this is an isser, the Ramban talks about it. The Torah says the land may not be sold permanently. L'chul tonis is the translation. Ki li ha'aretz. The Torah says, you know why? Because the land doesn't really belong to us, it belongs to God. The Sifra comments, Al Teira Einechaba, ki geirim v'so shavim atem. Don't feel that it's not fair. It's not fair I have to give the land back. It's not fair with Yeshua's Tanaim that I don't have absolute rights to my land. Because after all, we are geirim v'so shavim. We are just sojourners. But the land belongs to God. Al tasu atzmeichem ikar. Don't think that you are the ikar. V'chein hu omer by David HaMelech at the end of the Rayamim, ki geirim anachnu lufanecha v'so shavim kichol avoseinu. Okay? And therefore, the Torah is telling us that don't think that even if you receive the chelik in the aretz, it is not yours absolutely. You don't have the capacity to sell your land permanently. And by the same token, Yehoshua enforced a similar principle. He said, yes, I mean, manchel you the land, but for public good, we are attaching certain restrictions or certain rights of public use in your land. And sometimes it means consuming stuff because most people are makbid. Sometimes it means consuming resources even people are makbid, like the water. And sometimes it means that people, in order to avoid injury, can do incidental damage to your property. And sometimes, even according to some Tanaim, they're allowed to use your property to save their own property, although in those cases they would have to pay. And I think that this is worthy of reminding ourselves, because we do live in a culture, and I've spoken about this many times, there are two forms of either Ksira Avodah Zarah that float around in contemporary Western society, particularly American society. Number one is what is referred to as the prosperity gospel or doctrine, the Protestant prosperity doctrine. And the other is a specific form of capitalism. You know, the Torah is capitalist, but it's a specific form of capitalism would be attributed to Ayn Rand. And some of you who are alumni of Yeshivat Haaretzion know, even though it probably was not productive, that there was one author that Lichtenstein told people they shouldn't read, and that was Ayn Rand. Of course, when you tell people that, they're all going to go read it. But basically, these two philosophies assume essentially kochi ve'otzem yadi asali asachayal zed. The rich are rich because they deserve to be rich, and the poor are poor because they deserve to be poor. And that is not the hashkafas haTorah. It is reflected in many, many, many different halachos, many different psukim, and it is very much deeply embodied in the principle behind the Tanaim of Yehoshua. When Yehoshua was manchil lanu es ha'aretz, he reminded us with these Tanaim that your rights to your own property, which the halacha recognizes as your property, are not absolute. And there are many times that the public good, in fact, overrides your own private property rights. So while the devil sometimes is in the details, the basic hashkafa is absolutely clear. That really, our property, in a certain sense, is not actually our property, but rather, it belongs to the Ribbono Shalom, Kili Haaretz.
Yeah. So are you saying that Yeshua personally established these conditions as applicable everywhere?
The Machlokes HaMorayim, obviously, according to Shmuel, we paskin like that, it applies in Chutz La'aretz. The original assumption when the Jews entered the land, all of the Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael. Shmuel's assumption is that the principles embodied here of how we are supposed to relate to private property are applicable to Jews dealing with Jews everywhere.
How do you understand the dissenting view that it applies in Babel?
That the one we paskin like.
No, that it applies. I feel a bit. Babel.
That's what I'm saying. That we paskin them like Shmuel's.
Shmuel says I feel a bit chutzal
aretz. That what's that?
Rav
says I feel a bit Babel. Shmuel says I feel a bit chutzal aretz.
Did I get that wrong in the Gemara? Sorry. Oh, you mean the distinction between those two? I don't know. I don't know why the distinction between those two. But we passed in like Shmuel, and so the Psak Halacha then is very clear. Even, you know, I don't think the Shulchan Aruch, I put the Rambam here. The Rambam wonders in Middle Chosha Mishpat, how come nobody quotes the Asarat Tanam of Yeshua? The Rambam does, but the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber did not. And Rambam said, because probably we don't typically have land, and we don't have so much of the stuff that they don't actually come up. But the assumption is the Dinim would actually apply in Chutz La'aretz. And today Jews are into real estate, although it's not usually this kind of real estate, not farmland. So the Din is, though, that it would apply. It would apply even Chutz La'aretz. I don't know why the distinction between the two.
And is the Sefer only talking about... Is the Sefer also talking about Chutz La'aretz?
No, it's talking about Eretz Yisrael. It's talking about Eretz Yisrael. But again, remember, the assumption is that all the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. So we're not here. But that was the idea. And the assumption that you extend it beyond Eretz Yisrael says that while these takanos, the original reason... I mean, the reason Chutz La'aretz is still the same thing. Ki li ha'aretz also applies. God does own Chutz La'aretz too. He owns Goyim's property also. We just don't have the capacity to enforce it upon others. But yes, all of the land, I know we read Kili Haaretz because it's in the context of Eretz Yisrael, but all of the world belongs to Ribbono Shel Olam. Lashem Haaretz Umlawa. And Haaretz Umlawa does not only refer to Eretz Yisrael there. So this, it's not hard to understand the Svara. It's also easy to understand why it might be limited, because maybe the Tanaim were only made in the context, it is a kind of takana, and maybe it was only made in a context in which the Torah expected the Jewish people to be in its ideal living state. Any other questions? Okay. Enjoy the rest of this happy day. I didn't stop it because I don't know.